Welcome to today's SNEB webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB, and so glad you're joining us today for this special program. We're very excited to have to meet the team from USDA, the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, NIFA for short. And if you can see across the screen, we have quite a few esteemed panelists with us today. So this is a 90-minute session, but just a reminder, we are recording today. So if for some reason you're not able to stay for the entire 90 minutes, the recording will be available in a follow-up. So we will also take questions. The team has a lot of information to present, but then we also have time for Q&A. So please type those questions in the question box so we can moderate those to our panelists. We can do a follow-up if we have more questions than we have time for. So please don't hesitate to just go ahead and type your questions. We'll either address that during the live presentation or follow up with you to make sure that that question gets answered. When I close the webinar today, there's a short survey, so we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as any recommendations for future webinars. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, we do have the handout available for today's slides. So feel free to download that handout and follow along during the presentation. In the follow-up email you'll get probably Wednesday of this week, we'll have the recording, the handout as a follow-up. I've already heard that there may be some links shared in the chat for additional resources. We'll make sure to gather up those links as well and put those in our follow-up email. So let's go ahead and get our presentation started. I will introduce our moderator today, Sheila Flashhacker, who is an SNEB member, serves as the National Science Liaison for NIFA. And in this role, she connects stakeholders such as SNEB members with the NIFA team. So I'll turn it over to Sheila.
Thank you, Rachel. And we really, I say on behalf of the whole NIFA Nutrition family, really want to give a big thank you to you and Christine, who really helped us orchestrate this NIFA update. As you can see from our big panel, that involved gathering a lot of links, a lot of vitas, and just a lot of thought to make this 90 minutes really worthwhile for SNEB members. So we really appreciate Rachel and Christine's, all their help on the logistics, and really overall the society for this really nice invite and opportunity to provide a NIFA update. Most of you guys, I think, get to spend quality time with NIFA colleagues at the annual SNEB meeting. So we are very intentional with our update that we are providing an update of an organization that really isn't a very significant and exciting rebuild, but also again that we don't have that time to spend with you virtually or in person, so we're compensating virtually. So we hope this is really just a kickoff to a variety of events that we'll work with SNEB to have, so you can get to meet our staff and really get your questions answered. So we really hope you could be aware of our resources, and also hope we set you up for success for applying for any of our funding opportunities. So really, hopefully, as we transition to meeting our panels, you really do feel like this is an informal conversation after we get started today, and hopefully as we move forward with you in the year to come. So with that, I do want to introduce my colleagues. I want to start with Suzanne Zaluska. They're going to be each introducing themselves, and so appreciate you as we walk through our list, taking the time to take notes of who everybody is. So Suzanne?
Yes, good afternoon. Suzanne Zaluska. I am the Deputy Director for the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition.
Hello, everyone. This is Steve Zhang. I'm the Division Director of Food Safety Division, and also I am the Acting Division Director of Nutrition Division.
Hello, I'm Helen Shipman. I'm a National Program Leader with an emphasis on nutrition education, particularly for low-income populations.
Good afternoon, Corinthia Cherry, Expanded Food Nutrition Education Program Coordinator.
Hello, I'm Mallory Canings. I'm a National Program Leader for Community Nutrition Programs in the Nutrition Division.
Good afternoon, my name is Lydia Kame. I'm a National Program Leader in the Nutrition Division.
Hello, I'm Lisa Jans. Excuse me. I'm an NPL in the Division of Nutrition, and I oversee the Food and Ag Service Learning Program that I'll be talking about later.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Ryan Cornegay. I'm a program specialist with the National Institute of Food and Agriculture's Food Safety and Nutrition Institute, working with the nutrition program, specifically the Food and Agriculture Service Learning Program and the Gushue Market Nutrition Incentive Program. And I'm excited to share with you all today.
Good afternoon. I am Stephanie Morris. I am the data analyst for the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition. Glad to be here.
Good afternoon. I'm Eddie Brown. I'm the Administrative Officer for Food Safety and Nutrition.
I'm Glenda Bethia. I'm the Secretary for the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition.
Thank you. So we're very excited to spend time with you today. And hopefully, again, we really do see this as a kickoff of conversations to meet with us. So we will make sure that SNEB has all our email contact information. And again, hopefully we encourage you all to reach out as you have more questions. So again, today we're gonna go through a lot in about 60 to 70 minutes on giving you a NIFA update. Suzanne's gonna really kind of walk through what NIFA is and where it relates to our overall Department of USDA. I'm gonna walk through some of our key priorities that we're working on, nutrition security being a key one. Steve will walk through, I think, some of your biggest questions about funding. And then all of our national program leaders and staff are gonna walk through our various programs that we think are most relevant to the SNEB audience. And again, a variety of resources as well. And then we hope to have at least 10 to 12 minutes for Q&A. Please populate the Q&A box early and often with questions. We will try our best to get through them live today. If not, we'll work with Rachel and make sure all questions that are submitted today are responded to. So with that, I have the pleasure to introduce Suzanne Saluzka.
Thank you, Sheila. So I just want to start out by talking at the high level. So as you can see here on the slide, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is made up of nearly 100,000 employees, and they serve the public at more than 4,500 locations across the country and abroad. And so at the highest level, USDA is organized into 8 program-focused mission areas and 10 offices that support the administration of USDA. And so each of those mission areas is led by an undersecretary and consists of mission-specific agencies. And as you can see here with the arrow, NIFA is under RE, and we are awaiting, via Senate confirmation, Dr. Chavonda Jacobs-Young to be our undersecretary. So next slide. So also with NIFA, here's our structure here for you, and what is happening now is that we have built back up to about 300 staff, and that's because we moved. And so our main location is at 805 Pennsylvania Avenue in Kansas City. And so please, as things start to open up, come and visit if you can. We'd be happy to meet you there. But we are rebuilding as an agency. We're rebuilding back, as our director would say, back better and stronger. And so you can see here, again, how our institutes are structured and the new leadership that we have across NIFA as well. So again, if you notice, on the right hand is the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition. And so that's primarily where we're coming from you today, but you can see the other programmatic areas listed as well. So next slide. This just does a deeper dive. You've met many of my staff and colleagues here in the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition. So this just gives you a bigger overview. And there's some that, again, we're not able to attend today. And so that's primarily on our food safety side. And so you can kind of see some of those names and the various individuals that are fulfilled there. And then we also have a lot of students too that are coming as well and support our work here in the Institute. So next slide. So here is the land grant university system and NIFA. And so we are, if you're not familiar with NIFA, the lead federal agency providing that extramural funding for food and ag sciences. And so we were created in 2008 through that Food Conservation and Energy Act. And here's just a real quick snapshot of our budget, about $1.95 billion, and that was in fiscal year 21. And we have both what we call competitive and capacity funds, and Dr. Zhang will actually do a deeper dive into that structure as well. If you were not familiar with our mission, it is about agricultural research, education, and extension. And really, the vision is about catalyzing those discoveries and that engagement across agricultural challenges. Next slide. So doing a little bit deeper dive, we really invest in three types of activities, research, education, and extension. And so research provides answers to those complex issues facing our nation and our world, and really around the food and agricultural sciences. And then we have education there, as you see on the left, and that's where we're strengthening schools and universities to train that next generation of scientists, educators, producers, and citizens. And then the extension component is really taking that knowledge that's being learned and gained through research and education and getting it out to our stakeholders and to individuals across the nation, and especially those communities and people that need it the most. Next slide. And this is just a quick snapshot of the land grant university system. And so again, that is, as Steve is going to talk to you about, with our capacity funding, the support that we have there with this system. And you can see all the dots representing, the red dots are 1862 land grant universities. The primarily white are 1890s or historically Black colleges and universities, and then the green are our 1994 tribal colleges and universities. And I'd be remiss not to mention that, you know, we work broader than just land grant universities. There's also non-land grants, nonprofits, community-based organizations as well. And many of my program leaders and staff that are on today are going to talk to you about those opportunities as well. Next slide. When you enter our website, this is the topic page that you will see there. And so just highlighting a few of those areas and the work that we do. And so in our institute, we are spread across many of the areas, but you'll primarily find us in food science and health. And I'm actually going to turn it back over to Sheila, Dr. Fleischacker, who's going to talk to you about updating this page and our work to address the Secretary's goals in tackling food and nutrition security. So thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. And we're very lucky to have you now as our new Institute Deputy Director. And we're very excited under her leadership to be re-updating, reinventing this page. NIFA is overall updating its website late February. And so we're hopeful on kind of an early March timeline to be launching new material here. And we'll make sure Rachel is abreast of that on the SNEB through dissemination medium. So you know the new content is there. And again, part of our content is lifting up all our grantees' work. So if there's a story you'd love to share, please make sure we're aware of it, and we will do our best to kind of share it through our network. So in terms of NIFA's priorities, one key one that fits within the NIFA nutrition space and is really relevant to SNEB is the departmental goals around nutrition security. So again, this is one of the five secretary's key goals, and again, very specifically tackling food and nutrition insecurity. So we're very excited to be listed in this space, but also very aware that this is a very real need across our country in terms of addressing both food insecurity and the diet-related chronic diseases and disparities our nation faces. At NIFA, over a year ago, we have brought together one of our key assets in addressing these goals, which is our team. We've brought in over 60 members from NIFA to help us tackle food and nutrition security. And you can see from our approach here with the boxes, it's very much a cross-institute approach. We are very much trying our best to bring together all the disciplines necessary to really tackle food and nutrition insecurity. We also have collated as a team all the relevant programs at NIFA that really tackle food and nutrition insecurity. Here, there's over 20 listed. You're gonna hear a number of them today through our AFRI and non-AFRI programs. And again, not all of them will be discussed. We welcome questions about that, or we can circle back. We also wanna highlight our NIFA nutrition security webinar series is highlighting both our programs and our priorities in this space over the coming year, and encourage you to tune in. We'll give the link to that in a minute. for our priorities right now, they're pretty all encompassing to kind of capture all those things going on in those 20 relevant programs. But really specifically, we are focusing on supporting innovative inter and transdisciplinary solutions. We really want to harness a holistic research agenda from farm to fork and beyond. We recognize behavior is a key part of what we do. And also, we've been really strong, and Lydia's going to share some examples later, of integrating climate smart agriculture and our ability to tackle food and nutrition security. And then again, throughout all of our work, and I think you'll hear that particularly through Helen and Corinthia's work on FNIP, is we really try to empower individual and community agency. As I mentioned, Lydia will highlight our particular work with climate change, but we really at NIFA have been working across 5 priority areas. So again, kind of aligning very closely to the Secretary's 5 goals. And we have representation across our NIFA nutrition colleagues here today on all of these teams. And so really one of the big things we are trying to do is really cross-connect with nutrition security across all these disciplines and priority areas. And that's what we'll be encouraging a lot in our RFAs too. So hopefully, again, you can see that synergy of working across priorities and across sectors. Another key theme, while not a priority team per se for us, or one of the secretary's per se specific goals, is really youth voice. Here at NIFA, we have the honor of administering the National 4-H program. And so we really are trying our best to kind of think throughout all of our programs and all of our efforts of where and how we can integrate youth voice. I'm really lucky to serve on the National 4-H conference this year, and really I'm looking forward to March 22nd Secretary Conference, where the youth are gonna share in a variety of agency challenge questions, their thoughts on nutrition security. And again, we hope that's just food for thought for our future relationships with youth and youth voice. I wanna highlight here a special relationship we have with Extension Foundation and the variety of authors across the Extension Network that came together to put together this national framework for health equity and well-being. This was highlighted in our January webinar series, and here are the links for this framework. So we're really hoping through a letter of cooperative agreement that we help the implementation of this framework nationwide, and also again, kind of dive deeper on some of these synergies and the work that will be helped make those cross-priority synergies happen. So I'm really excited about this work ahead, and again, think this is really relevant to SNEB work. Again, I've noted a couple of times our NIFA Nutrition Security Series. It's been nice to see many SNEB members attend this throughout our 7 editions so far. Encourage you guys to look at our website. Again, it will be updated in the coming weeks, but it has our next one, which is February 23rd. You can register there, and again, it should have soon all of our materials from past webinars. So encourage you to look at the past, suggest things for the future, and really again appreciate SNEB's support in helping to disseminate those webinars throughout the year. At this point, I have the honor to transition to Dr. Zane, who's going to walk through some of your key questions on funding. Dr. Zane.
Thank you, Sheila. Before I start my portion, I certainly like to acknowledge food nutrition security is not just a priority for our Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition, but it garnered national USDA's attention. So nutrition security is the priority for NIFA across country. So as most of you probably know, NIFA is the biggest extramural funding agency for food and agriculture, research, extension, and outreach. So there are different types of financial assistance, competitive grant, capacity, and the infrastructure grant. Next, please. So there are certain types of projects. They are standing alone projects, research in the extension and the education, but we certainly encourage highly to incorporate research and extension with education, and also all combined research, extension, and education as integrated projects. The grant types, we have 4 of them: standard project, strengthening project, conference or you call workshop grant and FACE certainly is one thing we try to encourage and the strength. Next, please. So as you can see here, research, education, and the extension, these are the three pillars of NIFA. And the integrated project includes at least two of the three functions, either research education or research extension or education and extension. So within a project, you know, some program areas may require integrated projects include all three. Next, please. So in NIFA, as a funding agency, each every year, annually, we distribute or fund approximately $2 billion, B as in boy, $2 billion each year. And specifically in the Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition, we distribute about $200 million each year. With this year, about 5% additional money will be available for distribution. So we anticipate a little over more than $200 million in our institute alone. So many of you probably heard AFRI. AFRI stands for Agriculture and Food Research Initiative. This is our flagship funding programs within our institute and within NIFA. Next, please. Yeah, we have many AFRI programs as well as capacity and other extension the food safety programs. We'll name a few for like food safety and the defense and FNET, GusNet. Many of them are on competitive and non-competitive basis. You can find a lot of this funding program through our website. And later on, we'll have our specific NPL, National Program Leaders, to illustrate and demonstrate some of the specific requirements and the funding RFAs to you. Next, please. Of course, NPLs are your primary source to find specific funding program information, but also online, our NIFA website, we have upcoming requests for application, and you can find the calendars throughout the year, the RFA publication, the application deadlines. So detailed information is illustrated on the website. Next, please. So, like I said, national program leaders are our leaders which manage specific funding programs. I will invite our national program leaders to demonstrate their specific funding programs to you. Next. So here are there some of the AFRI programs. I'm not going to name one by one, but this is listed in this PowerPoint. I'm pretty sure it will be made available to you. Next, please. There are some cross-cutting programs relevant to food safety, particularly nutrition and health program areas. Some of these are cross-cutting, working with other divisions, other institutes, And these are the three most prominent ones: agriculture microbiomes, implant system and natural resources, data science for food and system, and critical agriculture research and extension we call it CARE. Next, please. Some of the non-AFWI programs are listed here. And I think our national foreign leaders are following up on these specific programs shortly. Next, please. So I'm going to ask our national program leader, Dr. Mallory Canings, to talk about the diet, nutrition, and prevention of chronic diseases. Mallory?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to kick off the section where we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the program areas that we have funding support for. Diet, nutrition, and prevention of chronic diseases within the AFRI Foundational and Applied Sciences portfolio is one of those. So this RFA is currently open. The next deadline is August 25th, right? So this coming summer. And this is a program area that accepts integrated projects, which must include at least two of the three functions of agriculture. Okay, so two of research, education, and extension in any combination. And the grant types here are standard grants, conference grants, which have a rolling application deadline, and what we call food and agricultural science enhancement grants, or FASE for short. So that's where awards with smaller budget sizes of $300,000 over 2 years for what we would call a seed grant, right, to fund some pilot work, as well as equipment grants and sabbatical grants are supported within AFRI. On the next slide, what you'll be looking at will be the specific program area priority for diet, nutrition, and prevention of chronic diseases. That really emphasizes that integrated nature of all of this work. Of course, requires that all project teams on these proposals are aware, right, of food availability, food access, really additional lifestyle factors, additional environmental factors that all come into, you know, developing and evaluating interventions to improve, right, eating patterns, right, prevent disease, improve food security and health outcomes, and of course, right, also sustain health, especially in our limited resource populations. So feel free, if you have any questions about the RFA, to reach out to me. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to my colleague, Dr. Lydia Kwame, next.
Thank you so much, Mallory, for that introduction. I am going to talk about a new program that has been developed recently, and this is where we connect or cross-cut with climate change, or climate programs. So climate change is characterized by features such as increased temperatures due to increased CO2 emissions, and these effects, definitely coupled with the population growth, have tremendous implications to our food system, and they are driving climate-induced food prices. The volatile weather patterns jeopardize the way in which we produce, store, and distribute food. So this AFRI program area, Extension, Education, and USDA Climate Hubs partnerships has been developed to respond to this need and to advance science and projects that mitigate the impacts of climate change. I would like to encourage all of us to look at this RFA. It closes, the program is open, and it will close October 6, 2022 at 5 p.m. Eastern. And the nutrition community is really encouraged to look at this opportunity, because at the intersect, much as it's much more, it talks about climate change, it intersects with our food system. The Institute of Food Safety and Nutrition funded one of these projects in this past year for $1.5 million for 16 months. And I would just like to highlight what the proposal that we funded was. That proposal was around native climate, strengthening the role of climate hubs in Indian country. And it is led by Dr. Maureen McCarthy, who works with the Desert Research Institute. And the collaborators include the University of Nevada, Reno, University of Arizona, University of Montana, Southwest Climate Hub, and Northern Plains Climate Hub. This integrated extension education project will expand the capacity of USDA climate hubs and serve as a clearinghouse of tools and technologies to support climate resilience planning and actions by tribal agricultural producers in the Intermountain West. We the IFSN team thought this proposal really puts community at the center of solutions for climate change and food and nutrition security while improving the connection between people and food systems. And we just wanted to highlight this for you all because it is one of those new programs. We had six projects funded at $9 million this year. And this map shows you where the different regional climate hubs are. So that these are the collaborators we would be looking into working with. Next, please. So the next program, AFRI program that I co-lead that I'm going to talk about, and it's the coordinated agriculture, provides a coordinated agricultural project. SAS is a sustainable agriculture systems. Solicits creative visionary projects that develop interdisciplinary teams, integrated research education and extension activities, and effective use of systems approach in working through food systems. It looks for impactful projects to solve present and future challenges of food and agricultural systems. This project, each project is usually awarded $10 million. 32 projects have been funded up to this time. And the goal areas change every year, but they will be written very broadly and inclusively. There's usually a letter of intent, which is then followed by a full review process. I would encourage the nutrition community once again to look at this program when it opens. It's not open right now, but this is one of those other areas where the nutrition community can really work together with other collaborators to solve food challenges in the entire food system. Next, I will now invite our non-AFRI programs, starting with FNEP, with Helen and Carinthia to give us an update. Thank you.
I think you're muted, Helen.
Yes.
Okay, something happened because I had it on unmute. Anyway, apologies for that. I will be presenting about the Expanded Food Nutrition Education Program along with Dr. Printhia Cherry. A little bit about FNEP. First, I would say that we've had a long-standing relationship with the Society for Nutrition Education Behavior. It's one we greatly value and appreciate, and we look forward to continuing that relationship. The members of this community have been very helpful to the work that we do, so thank you. For FNEP, federal funding stands at roughly $70 million, and it has been such for a number of years. FNEP is funded as a capacity grant and administered through the Cooperative Extension Service System through the land-grant universities, the 1862s and the 1890 institutions specifically. We have 76 1890 and 1862 institutions across the country, the territories, and the District of Columbia. Because of this is a capacity grant, in a given year, we receive applications only from those institutions, and we fund them all according to a formula that is determined by a congressional mandate as far as what is required, and that specifically pertains to census population data and poverty. That doesn't mean that the applicants don't have to meet certain parameters. They do. They need to meet certain program requirements, they need to submit an application, and then they need to show performance in terms of meeting the objectives and the needs of the program. FNAP is the nation's first federal nutrition education program, and it is more than a half a century that we've had nutrition education on this level. It uses a federally mandated peer educator model, and then today's vernacular, that is, it values life experience. FNAP combines this life experience with professional expertise and data to achieve its intent. As reflected in the stated purpose that you can see here, FNAP reduces nutrition insecurity by assisting low-income families and youth in acquiring knowledge, skills, attitudes, and changed behavior. And I would underscore the changed behavior that is necessary for nutritionally sound diets and to contribute to the personal development and improvement of the total family and the family's nutritional well-being. It combines hands-on learning, applied science, and program data to ensure program effectiveness, efficiency, and accountability. And stakeholders, as you can see, they are extension community partners, our sister agency, the Food and Nutrition Service, and academia. But I would also include the program participants and the program staff, because we are, it's very important to us that we recognize all people who are part of the program as being part of the solution. And I'll turn the time to Corinthia.
Next slide, please. Thank you, Helen. Good afternoon again. So just talking a little bit about FNAP and our reach. Each year we reach around 88,000 adults and over 300,000 youth. And this is our annual participation. And as Helen stated, we have 76 institutions and they are in all 50 states and in six territories and insular communities. And we also include the District of Columbia. So one of the things that, and our goal with FNAP is we want to meet limited resource audiences where they are. So we deliver nutrition education in a variety of settings. That can be in schools, places of public worship, housing, and adult community educational programs. So we target families with limited resources. And when we talk about these families, who are we talking about? We specifically are talking about parents and other caregivers who are responsible for feeding young children. And also we target young adults. And we're targeting young adults because eventually they are the next generation of parents. And so all of these individuals are limited resource audiences. And so we talk about who else we reach. So we reach an additional 250,000 family members, and that's our indirect reach. And again, 80% of our participants are at or below the poverty line. So we talked about the figures a little bit, but in addition to that, by virtue of being embedded in the cooperative extension system, our FNAP professionals not only provide guidance and support to peer educator staff, but they're also involved in the policy system and environmental change. And so that's a key component that we wanted to highlight for you today as well. We do direct education, but we also are delivering PSC. And so our goal is to ultimately change communities in support of what individuals are trying to learn and to do. So next slide, please. So a little bit about our FNAP impact. So over 50 years of history here, so FNAP is a well-storied program with outcomes that support success. So we have our quality, our four core areas, or our core areas are diet quality and physical activity, food safety, food resource management, and food security. And so we've reached over 34 million income eligible families and youth since 1969. And so our goal is to help participants enhance their health through improving their nutrition, food safety, and physical activity practices. And again, more than 90% of our adults report improvement in food behaviors. So it's consistent that we've seen improved self-reported behaviors, improvements in our HEIs. And so this is what our goal is, to build upon our programs, our participant strengths. So we target them where they are and let them lead how we educate them. So I'll turn it over to Helen just a little bit to close us out here.
Thank you again, Corinthia. And so what we're looking at is, what is it that does it take to achieve this success? And some of the things that we've learned through FNIP is to give attention to program quality, effectiveness, and integrity. We utilize the data to guide programming. We make it personal for participants and for those who serve, because we are a community and we support each other. Implementation research is very important. We have a multi-state research group, and we have others in this SNDB community and elsewhere who have done research that has been very helpful. We appreciate that. FNIP has been able to punt and to be nimble. So it's a national program. It has local flexibilities, but it also has to be nimble with the pandemic, moving to technology. And then we have another initiative in the area of food resource management, as we look at the weather and other challenges that face people across the nation, particularly hit people hard who are struggling financially. And then lastly, although FNIP was the initial player in this space, it certainly is not the only player at this time. And so it's really important that we cooperate and we collaborate with others, whether it's federal partners or others in the communities, because ultimately our end goal is helping those families who are struggling and working together to make that happen. And with that, I will turn the time back to, I believe it's Lydia, Dr. Lydia Comey.
Yes, thank you. It's me again. This time, I'm going to be talking about Community Foods Projects, which is a non-AFRI program. Community Foods Project has a budget of about $5 million, was about $5 million in 2021, and the same about the same for 2022 as well. So the goals of the Community Foods Project is to fight food insecurity through developing or implementing community food projects that help promote the self-sufficiency of low-income communities. It is also to increase food security in communities by bringing the whole food system together in building upon the strengths of the community through the interlinkages of all the people working or all the parts working in the food system. To meet the food needs of individuals living under the federal poverty line through food distribution, outreach to increase participation in federally assisted program, nutrition programs, or improve access to food through promoting comprehensive responses to local food access, farm and nutrition issues. The other part of this, the goal of CFP, is really to create that community-led. It could be led by the local, by local coalitions, by neighborhoods, and other agricultural programs. And it may include equipment that is necessary to get the projects moving in the community. The funding can also provide innovative marketing activities, mutually benefiting agricultural producers and also low-income consumers. The food community, the food project's maximum award is $400,000 over 4 years, and the planning grants is $35,000 over 3 years. These projects have 100% match. They've got to have a dollar for a dollar match for these projects. They are in alignment with the administrative priorities of advancing racial justice, equity, and opportunity, creating more and better market opportunities through the local food systems, and tackling food and nutrition insecurity. You may ask who is eligible to apply to this grant. So our stakeholders for the community food projects are usually state and local partners, nonprofit organizations, communities, farmers, and ranchers. It is the type of award that can also be sub-awarded when you have several parts of our food system working together. Next, for our next program, I will ask Mallory to talk about CASNIP. Welcome, Mallory. You're muted, Mallory.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. So like the Community Food Project grant program, the Gus Schumacher Nutrition Incentive Program is available to nonprofits and governmental agencies. And this, of course, includes tribal governmental agencies. The goal of the GUSNIP program is to bring together stakeholders from the food and healthcare systems to improve the health and nutrition status of participants. This program has three components. The Nutrition Incentive Program, which is focused on increasing the purchase of fruits and vegetables among the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, as well as the Nutrition Assistance Program, block grants participants at a point of purchase, as well as the Produce Prescription Program. And this is a program that provides prescriptions for fresh produce and aims to improve, you know, fruit and vegetable consumption, overall dietary pattern, individual and household food security, as well as reducing healthcare utilization and associated costs. And the third component is a cooperative agreement that's competed only every 4 years for the Nutrition Incentive Program Training, Technical Assistance, Evaluation, and Information Centers, which we call NTAE for short. You can see here that there's nearly $46 million available in 2022 to support these projects, and that there's quite a breadth in project size, with nutrition incentive projects requiring a one-to-one match and produce prescription projects requiring no match at all. Next slide, please. What I want to leave the SNUB community with is that these projects on the whole are done in collaboration with nutrition education programs, whether that is SNAP-Ed, FNAP, WIC nutrition education, or other specifically developed, validated, and tested nutrition education programs that may be in individual communities, right? Or perhaps are available nationwide. And these projects support, right, many of the growing opportunities around improving food and nutrition security, food justice, and of course, due to the financial incentive, a lot of our economic recovery and marketing opportunities as well for local and regional food systems. And then on the next slide, what you will see is that on the main GUSNIP webpage, we provide links to all of the funded projects in this program area, as well as those funded projects from last year's emergency supplement, the COVID Relief and Response Program. So if you are interested in learning more, of course, feel free to reach out to me. We do anticipate that this request for applications will be published this month. And with that, I'm gonna go ahead and pass you off to my colleague, Dr. Lisa Jantz.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, I'm Lisa Jantz. I'm the NPL for the Food and Agriculture Service Learning Program. And the primary goals of this program are to increase the capacity for food, garden, and nutrition education within organizations or entities and school cafeterias and in the classroom to carry out activities that advance the nutritional health of children and nutrition education in elementary and secondary schools, and to foster higher levels of community engagement with the local food system. So priority is to create a farm to fork programs that can be used by school breakfast and lunch programs and help to advance the quality of school meals. Projects must be in an underserved community and facilitate a connection between elementary or secondary schools with agricultural producers in the local and regional area. The program is also focused on the development of leadership skills, knowledge, and qualities necessary to prepare students for food and agricultural careers. So specific activities may include developing practical applications to increase students' understanding of leadership roles and facilitating students' connection with the land and the food that they eat. As you can see, this program fits within the administration's priorities of advancing racial justice, equity, and opportunity, creating more and better market opportunities through our focus on local food systems, and tackling food and nutrition insecurity. The maximum award is $225,000, and there is no matching component. In FY23, the anticipated amount of funding is close to $2 million. Last year, the funding line was around 15%. Almost every entity is eligible, including individuals with qualifications to complete your project, so please do read the RFA carefully to determine if your organization is eligible. Next slide, please. Funded project examples include, but are not limited to, expanding farm-to-school programs beyond lunch to bring local or regional products into the school breakfast program, developing promotional campaigns in support of farm-to-school initiatives, establishing new or strengthening existing community partnerships, encouraging increased consumption of fruits and vegetables through promotional activities, taste tests, and other activities, expanding experiential or agriculture-based learning opportunities, such as the creation of school gardens, support to ag and food clubs, or increased exposure to on-farm activities, and developing and evaluating integrated curriculum to reinforce food and nutrition-based learning throughout the school environment. So please search for the RFA, as Sheila and Steve showed us earlier, or you can even Google Food and Agriculture Service Learning Program NIFA, and you'll find a page with my contact information and a link to previously funded projects. And we'll have an informational webinar up in the next couple of weeks. You'll find the previous RFA on the website, and the new RFA has an expected release date of fall in this year. And please do reach out to me with any questions. Email is the best way to reach me. And now it's my pleasure to turn the presentation back over to Dr. Steve Zhang.
Steve, you're on mute. You're on mute. You're on mute.
Okay, thank you. I think we went on mute back forth. Now, can everyone hear me? Okay, I'm asked to just touch base, talk about the food safety outreach program, because our MPL, Jody Williams, is conducting the panel review as we are speaking. The panel review will last until Thursday, so hopefully we'll come out with some outstanding proposals to be funded. We have 46, as I was informed today. And just to give you a sense what this food safety outreach program is about, this year we have $10 million to be distributed. And just using last year, fiscal year 2021 project as the illustration, this food safety outreach program divided into several categories. One certainly is the community outreach project, which funded about $80,000 to about $150,000 over 2 years. And the collaborative education and training project commenced higher funding, ranging from $200,000 to $400,000 over 3 years. We have four regional centers, throughout the country, because funded by a joint program between FDA and the NIFA. The regional centers, we funded about $800,000 to $1 million over 3 years of period. So I'm going to turn back to Lydia.
Thank you, Steve. This next program that I'm going to talk about is called the Small Business Innovation Research Program. 8.5 is our code, and it is for food science and nutrition. The Small Business Innovation Research Program is a huge program for NIFA, and the food science and nutrition is one of the priority areas for SBIR. The funding for 2021 for this program for the phase one was about 1.75 and 2.5 for phase two. To explain slightly what those two phases are, is that in the first phase, our stakeholders who are business, small business owners, are proposing an idea, and they would like funding for phase one, which is about 8 months, to ensure that the idea is technically feasible. And in phase two, then they can commercialize that idea in a nutshell. So the purpose of the program for 8.5 is to increase the understanding of physical, chemical, and biological properties of food, improve methods for processing and packaging of food products to improve the quality, safety, and nutritional value of foods, and to reduce food waste. Another purpose or goal of the program is to develop technologies for rapid and sensitive detection of pathogens and toxins in food, and develop programs or products that increase the consumption of healthy foods and reduce obesity, or alleviate urban and rural food deserts. So as you can see, the program is really wide and broad, and about anything in this priority, in this goals can fit into this priority area. This is aligned with advancing racial equity, justice and opportunity, increasing more and better market opportunities, tackling food and nutrition insecurity. The amounts that are provided for phase one per applicant is $175,000 to be used within 8 months. And then for phase two is $600,000. If you have any questions about these programs, the websites are on the slide, but you can also email me. You will find my contact information and that of Jody Williams, who is not here today, on that page, and you can email that to us. Phase two is open right now, but phase one will be open again in the coming year. I will now turn it back to Mallory. Mallory, next.
Thank you very much. So the last program I'm going to be sharing with you all today is the Equipment Grants Program. This is a program where we anticipate the request for applications being published this month in February. There's just under $5 million available to support equipment grants this year. And this is a program that is led by myself and my colleague Carlos Ortiz in the Institute of Youth, Family, and Community. And the Equipment Grants Program serves to support the acquisition of a single well-integrated piece of equipment. This one piece of equipment, right, that institutions could propose to acquire can cost up to $500,000, and there's no matching required. Equipment, well-integrated equipment can be used to support fundamental as well as applied research, and the eligible applicants are very broad institutions of higher education. So that would be spanning serving institutions, institutions in insular areas, state cooperative extension systems, and of course, right, any institute of higher education. I highly recommend that folks take a look at this program. If you have a piece of equipment that you have in mind to purchase to support the work that you're doing and really enhance the capacity and productivity of your institution. And the next speaker is going to be Dr. Stephanie Morris.
Thank you. One other area we wanted to highlight today is our contributions to Closer to Zero. Closer to Zero is an initiative led by FDA, and we are working with them, among other federal colleagues, to consider ways we can utilize our vast partner and stakeholder networks to elevate the risk and target communications on how to reduce exposure to toxic elements from foods eaten by women who are pregnant and or lactating, infants, and young children. We are also exploring how our current and potential future investments in agricultural research, education, and extension can be leveraged to develop data-driven approaches to reduce toxic elements in production of critical food products. As the IFSN data analyst, I have conducted an IFA portfolio analysis and am now helping to co-chair a federal Closer to Zero subgroup examining relevant research gaps and opportunities. I'll turn it back over to Suzanne.
Thank you, Stephanie. Well, we are getting close to wrapping up today, but what I want to have shared with you is that we have current career opportunities available at NIFA. So if you're looking for those opportunities, you can see here on the slide, we have various programs. But what I'm really excited to end with today is to have you all hear from Mr. Ryan Cornegay, who came up as a student through NIFA and is now a federal employee with us. And so we want him to share his story with all of you so that you can see the opportunities that there are here at NIFA. So Ryan, please share that story.
Sure, thank you so much, Dr. Sluka. So excited to share with you all here today. And as Dr. Sluka said, there are a lot of different opportunities across the USDA to engage in either internship experiences or postgraduate experiences that you might be interested in across nutrition areas. I wanted to share today just kind of a little bit of my story and how I got engaged with the USDA. So I was actually able to engaged with a program called the USDA 1890 National Scholars Program. So as I graduated high school, this is a program that allows students to come in who will be attending 1890 historically Black colleges and universities. And so I was matched up with NIFA during my time. And during all of my summer years when I would be engaging with NIFA, I would come up to intern with them. I got a chance to basically get all of their different experience across NIFA, understanding what agriculture was from the research standpoint, and as well as how NIFA helps to fund a lot of those research opportunities. And so as someone who grew up in a very rural area who knew agriculture from the hands-on side, it was great to get that opportunity to see NIFA and understand exactly how things work on the research side. And so the opportunity through the 1890 scholarship program allowed me to engage with NIFA and understand some of the programs that we do across food safety and nutrition. My background is in food science specifically, but I got a chance to engage with nutrition programs, food safety programs, and a gamut of different things that I got a chance to just basically help me in my time as I was growing through college. I also got a chance to be able to engage with NIFA and intern during my graduate studies as well as I got my master's degree. And so this was an opportunity for me to really engage with NIFA as I was becoming a professional. And so NIFA provides all these opportunities, the USDA provides these opportunities. And even if you may not think you might be eligible for the USDA 1890 National Scholars Program, I do want to actually also share with you that there is a Pathways program that USDA has as well, which is really the main internship program that the USDA has to help really bring on premier interns. And so if you might be interested in any of those programs or interested in interning, or if you know a student who is looking for internship experience, have them go on to usajobs.com. All the pathways programs are usually listed directly under there, and you'll be able to engage with that. I'm also going to share here in the chat box in a moment links to the USDA 1090 National Scholars homepage for the USDA, as well as the USDA Pathways Program homepage as well. So if you want to learn more about the programs, what they do, how you can engage with it, or how you can help pass that information on to some young scholars, I definitely want to make sure that you all get the information. And just to let you know, this is not just for individuals who are just coming to college. You can intern with the USDA from high school, but you also intern with them in graduate school and postgraduate school. So there's the recent graduates program that you can engage with. There's also the Presidential Management Fellows Program. And so there's a lot of different opportunities. Don't kind of stiff yourself out. There's something there for you for sure. I also did want to share this, working with NIFA as a whole has really been a great opportunity, because NIFA allowed me to really get my feet wet in different areas. And so even as an intern and undergraduate in undergraduate studies, I wanted to see what working in a lab was like. And so NIFA afforded me the opportunity to go do a detail in the Beltsville Human Nutrition Research Center in Beltsville, Maryland. So really working with NIFA has just been an amazing experience. And so if you're interested in working around food safety, nutrition, or any of the other programs that we've shared with you all today, please, please, please check out NIFA. Check out the programs, and I promise you that you won't be sorry. So that's my story. Definitely looking forward to sharing with you all some more.
Thank you, Ryan. We are so fortunate that Ryan is a member of our team and can share his story with all of you. So thank you again. I think we have a few more slides here to go through. What we also want to leave and let you know about is that you can sign up now online to be a reviewer. And so we would like to encourage you, if you're listening today and have interest in serving on a peer review panel, to please take a few minutes. I promise you it only takes a few minutes of your time. But not only have you sign up, but can you please share this link with your partners, other colleagues that you may work with? Just really help us to spread the word. We really want to ensure that our panels are representative of the applicants that are applying, the communities they serve, and we can only do that if we get volunteers to sign up. And this is a great way to get into our system and get noted that you would be interested in doing that. So we will get you more information too, but you can see it's at the bottom of the slide there as well. And then finally, the last slide that I want to talk to you about I think we'll be sharing resources later. I guess we have these slides and we'll be getting you more of those resources. So I am going to turn it over now. That brings us to a close and let Sheila, Dr. Fleischacker moderate questions.
And I think we're all gonna come off camera and I'm gonna stop sharing screen. All right, I think I see most of our panelists, thumbs up. And I think you just see them and not my screen. All right, well, I wanna be the first to thank everyone publicly on an outstanding presentation. I think we had a tall order to do it in about 65, 70 minutes, and they delivered. Really greatly appreciate everyone's presentation of their programs. And again, a small way to introduce themselves, just knowing our virtual context, we don't get to meet many of you at conferences like SNEB. So now I wanna turn it over to our attendees to be able to ask questions. I'm looking at our question list and I don't see any yet. So I wanna encourage you guys to submit questions. In the interim, I'm gonna start off with our panel with some questions. First off, Ryan, I think you are an outstanding ambassador for working at NIFA and particularly at a young age. So again, really appreciate your overview of kind of how you got started. And I wanna really now turn the question to kind of being a young entry-level professional here at NIFA and really ask you to share some tips for folks who are really just starting to kind of look on the job market, both internship market and also the job market, and share any lessons learned you have about kind of infiltrating the federal government.
Sure. So thank you for that question, Dr. Fleischacker. So just to kind of give you all some tips for the trade, if you will, I would definitely say please as you go through and you're looking at opportunities for internships or even for jobs, careers, always be willing to reach out to someone who you might know who's already working there, whether it's NIFA or another agency across USDA. A lot of times, as we are public servants, individuals are usually always welcome to have their inbox, you know, to just give a moment to chat and talk about what it's like there, and also to just talk about what they do at their job. It's really great to really get a chance to know what their day-to-day job might be. And just to kind of give you a little bit more of an anecdote, when I got ready to come to NIFA, I just knew I was going to be, you know, in the lab or in the field somewhere, because it was the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. I just knew I was going to be there. But coming to find out, when I got a chance to come, I realized that was not the case. But I got a chance to really get into understanding what research and funding research looked like across agricultural sciences and food systems. So really getting an opportunity to talk with individuals to say, hey, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? And what does that look like? And also, how can I make myself more competitive? Really come into USDA. One of the other great things about the Pathways program is that I had a chance to engage with a number of mentors. And so those mentors really helped mold me and kind of give me that influence to understand, you know, what their journey was like, but also what to look out for, and also how to make myself look more competitive for when I got ready to transition to a full-time role. And so I would definitely share that with individuals who are looking for internships or even looking for jobs. Definitely try to find individuals who you might be able to engage with as a potential mentor or someone who is already where you want to be, because I promise it can help you get some more tips or get some more insight on what it looks like on the other side.
Outstanding advice, Ryan. Again, we encourage our SNE members, students, and really across all life cycles. If you have questions about NIFA or federal employment, please reach out to us. I think, again, that's part of those types of questions you usually ask us in person. And we really want to encourage you don't just have to reach out to our MPLs or our staff, you know, on a program specific type question. Many times we do offer that advice about our positions and the federal government employment. So just don't be shy. I appreciate Rachel's nudge of me getting to read better the questions and comments coming in. So appreciate that. I'm going to start from the top. So give me some grace here. I want to read out that there was a comment about thinking through sustainable food systems. Lydia, I want to put that on your deck since you do so much of our work looking at climate change and nutrition security. Thinking through our global impact. So when we're thinking through climate change and nutrition security.
So is it a question or a comment, Sheila?
Part question for a comment. I think part of the question to keep in mind for USDA, particularly NIFA, we do have a Center for International Programs. So we do work not only domestically, but internationally. And I think, again, to your point about thinking through global impact broadly on climate change and nutrition security, I think a lot of the emerging work that's coming through the USDA climate hubs and the sustainable agriculture systems, while based and funded primarily in domestic centers, is really thinking through research that does think through that broader global food systems approach. So hopefully that answered the question comment. I don't know if Lydia has additional questions for that comment, but I do want to say that, again, we primarily fund domestically, but again, I think a lot of our agriculture systems are thinking globally.
I don't have much to add to that, Sheila, other than to say a lot of our programs are thinking that way, and also thinking about the extension model of social determinants of health in trying to think holistically and systemically around solving all of these issues within the food system. But thank you for the comment.
That could be considered, sorry, Lydia, would be the sustainable ag systems portfolio on a whole, right? For any of these regional or national food systems approaches, and of course, positioning U.S. agriculture, right, since we do work domestically well in, of course, the overall global economy, is something that, to my ear, is certainly worth taking a look at the AFRI Sustainable Ag Systems RFA once it's released. I could see a lot of potential alignment there. Thank you, guys. And again, I see comments and posts about some of our links. So we'll make sure, again, you'll have our slide deck. We'll probably have a couple minor updates to our slide deck. So we'll make sure Rachel has our final slide deck. And we'll also pull out all the links highlighted. As Suzanne referenced, we did have an additional slide reference for resources where we compiled all the links. So we'll make sure we put that in the updated slide deck, and we'll also make sure Rachel has all the all the links pulled out from the slides. You have those handy. I think NIFA has a treasure trove of resources for many questions. So hopefully our links and our new website, as we kind of work through our food and nutrition security platform, help make navigating our resources easier for you. So I'm reading through again the question. Lisa, I'm teeing you up because there's one on the food and agriculture system. Rachel, could I cue you to help me a little bit? Because for some reason, the questions don't click up as easily. Rachel, do you see the one on the food and agriculture systems? Could you help me on that one? I'm clicking over it. All right. In the meantime, we'll come back to that one. There was a question about MATCH. So it's brought up in Lydia's program for community food programs and also for GusNIP. So Mallory, I know, deals with this a lot with GusNIP. So do you want to explain what MATCH means and again, how it impacts kind of eligibility and participation in applying for your programs? Mallory?
Sure. Yep. So what's convenient is that both community food projects and the GusNIP Nutrition Incentive projects require a one-to-one match. So what that means is that for every federal dollar an applicant is requesting, so let's say you're requesting $400,000, you would need to bring to that award $400,000 from your project team. So the total budget of your project would be $800,000, $400,000 of which, right, your project team is bringing to this effort. And there are many ways to meet the match requirement. That can be cash donations. It can also be donations that are in kind. So whether that ends up being a person's time, supplies, right, especially in, you know, CFP and GusNIP, that could be land used for a farmer's market, for a gardening project, the actual seeds, produce, right, things of that nature, as well as, of course, right, the time of an effort of your project team, as a few examples. I know that in both of these programs, right, we provide in our RFA webinars resources on how to determine eligible matching. And what that documentation would be to provide in an application for either community food projects or a nutrition incentive project. And we're, of course, happy to answer any specific questions. There really, it all depends on the project you're proposing, right? Because the match and, of course, the project activities need to align with those goals and objectives. Which is why we do tend to handle most of these questions on a case-by-case basis. So please don't be shy if, you know, you have an innovative idea that you want to put in front of a national program leader or a grant specialist.
If I could add, the among the resources that will be shared is the NIFA policy guide. And that's a very important document to look at because all of our programs are legislatively determined. And so the specifics, you can find out what that means and what that involves through the legislation. And that policy guide, I know for myself even, I use that as a resource to make sure that I'm tracking with what that particular program area allows. So just wanted to lift up that resource that you will have access to.
Thank you, Helen. And it is a very important one, not just for matching, but other NIFA policies. Lydia, did you want to share anything as it relates to Match for Community Foods program?
I think Dr. Kinnings covered it all. The only thing I would just add is on top of all that, in-kind matching, volunteer matching is also something that I see a lot in community foods. So because our applicants may be small community-based organizations that do not have a huge administrative cost in terms of, you know, and personnel cost, there's volunteers that work in the community, and that can also count as much. So, yeah, don't be discouraged. Like as my colleague said, just reach out to us and we answer questions based on your project.
Thank you, guys. And now I want to keep Mallory on deck. Lisa, I do see the Food and Agriculture Service Planning Project, so I will come back to you. But Mallory, there's a question specific to produce prescription programs.
The attendee asked, could it be implemented within a university system targeting its low-wage employees facing both food insecurity and high rates of chronic conditions? This would be implemented as a partnership between the university health services and cooperative extension faculty at the university. Thank you.
Okay, great question. And my first question back to you goes to the eligibility, right? So the eligible applicants for GustNet produce prescription are nonprofit organizations and governmental agencies, right? Such as tribal agencies. So if the university, whether it's right the cooperative extension system or the healthcare system, if I'm following the question, if that is a part of a governmental agency, then then the university itself could be the primary applicant. So that's sort of, we'll put a pin in that, right? Make sure you're eligible. If not, right, a clinical site where participants could be recruited for a produce prescription program could absolutely be, right, a university health system and a university health clinic. All produce prescription projects have to have a healthcare partner, of course, right, writing those prescriptions. And a university health center, right, university-wide clinics, whether it's for employees or for students, would be a strong potential partner. I'll also mention that across the GustNet portfolio, right, for the nutrition incentive projects and the produce prescription projects, there is a national comprehensive evaluation. And oftentimes proposals come in with third-party evaluation partners. And that's really an area, right, of course, with SNEB, Nutrition Education and Behavior Change Research, that we see a strong representation, right, across institutions of higher education as those external evaluators.
Thank you, Mallory. And again, Lisa, apologies, I didn't see the Food Agriculture Service Learning Project question. You probably saw it and were ready. And it also kind of relates to what Mallory's last question was in terms of college campuses. So the specific question is, could a project to expand the educational experiences at a university campus farm count, or is it only for kindergarten through 12th grade educational institutions?
Nice question. It's only for elementary and secondary students, although I have seen some projects that include university students that come in and work with the students on their leadership. So that's one way to be involved. And please reach out to me with other questions about that.
And again, I hope you're seeing a consistent theme here throughout our presentation and Q&A. If you have individual project questions, do reach out to our national program leaders directly. They're super responsive, whether it's via email or scheduled call. So the more information you give them, the better they can answer your questions. But again, all these kind of individual grant proposals you're thinking of, I always just encourage you early and often, but being respectful of their time, it is important to kind of have that reach out. I want to go to the next question. This one, I think, is a general question. Maybe Suzanne, you could talk through this. Do most of these projects funded by NIFA typically include researchers from land-grant institutions, or are smaller private institutions qualified if they meet other criteria that you have listed? So this came in, I'm not sure then if it was particular to a particular program. So Suzanne, do you want to just talk broadly about kind of where we fit with land-grant institutions and other grantees across our portfolio?
Sure. I mean, I think you just have to dive in and look at if you're an eligible applicant. And each of the RFAs that my colleagues talked to you about, there's a wide variety of eligible applicants. So don't hesitate again to ask about that. And sometimes even when you can't be the eligible applicant, there's subcontracting and other things that you can still be involved with as well. So if you're hesitant at any time, again, reach out, just ask us that question. But yes, we do not just fund land grants. There's a whole wealth of other agencies and universities, nonprofits, private entities that we work with.
Thank you, Suzanne. And Helen, this question is somewhat related to FNIP, and I could speak to it too after your response, but this deals with college food insecurity. So it says, FNIP targets young adults. There is concerning rates of food insecurity among college students. However, my understanding is that most college students are not eligible for SNAP, therefore not eligible to participate in FNIP. Am I correct? or are there ways to increase college student participation in FNIP? Thank you.
So FNIP targets families. And that's in the legislation. And for all of these RFAs, for everything we do, you have to look first at the legislation. We recently lifted up young adults, low income young adults, because they are, or will shortly be, families. And so that's how we come at, it's not like a college program, it's about families. And so if you can make a case for that, then there might be some possibility. And that is determined at the university level. That's not something that NIFA determines. This is a capacity program. And so the university is determined with the limited resources that they have in terms of funding, where and how can they best identify and target these families, whether they are the parents, the caregivers, whether they are young adults, emerging parents, or whether they are youth and children. That's a local decision.
And I want to expand to our broader portfolio within NIFA. I know other programs we highlighted today could be utilized to really target college students. Do any folks want to hear comment about that within the NIFA family? I'll look at you, Mallory, because I know we got this question.
Yeah. So I'll say that there's within AFRI, right, within diet, nutrition, prevention of chronic diseases, right, whatever particular disease condition you're preventing, right, and whatever life stage you may be targeting, right, there's a lot of flexibility, right, that's written very broadly. And of course, there's one of the like sub priorities of the program area priority focuses on, right, limited resource populations. So I think that could be something to take a look at. I'll also say that while in GusNIP, nutrition incentive projects, all participants must be households participating in SNAP or NAP, that in produce prescription, there's more than one way to determine eligibility, right? So as long as you have someone who, you know, again, this is very much focused on unlimited resource communities. So if you have someone who's at risk for managing a diet-related health condition and is either, right, eligible for SNAP, or if they're enrolled in medical assistance, right, such as Medicaid or CHIP, then that would be an eligible participant for a produce prescription program. That's if, right, the, you know, a strategy you had in mind would be a produce prescription strategy. So some alternative ways to think about it.
And for college food insecurity, you guys, someone had a preview when we were doing the presentation slides, but I am on detail with Dr. Sarah Bleich, who's the first director of nutrition security and health equity here at the Food and Nutrition Service. She's going to be coming to SNEB this summer for the plenary session for the ACPP. And so this is something, again, questions we could have on deck for our Food and Nutrition Service colleagues about where SNAP is going and serving college students. So welcome those questions for our FNS colleagues, knowing Sarah's on deck for our, I think, early August annual meeting. So welcome those. I do want to make sure I answer the remaining questions we have and also give one kind of final minute for our panelists. So Ryan, this question, since you've answered a lot of our internship questions, one question asked about, is citizenship an eligibility criteria for the US State internship programs?
So to my knowledge, for most of the Pathways programs, yes, and I don't quote me on that exactly. I want to make sure I check it back to make sure, but I'm pretty sure I remember seeing that as a requirement for most of them. However, I do want to say that I have seen individuals being able to, there are volunteer opportunities that you can also have with USDA. And so those are some opportunities that you can have from an international perspective. And then I want to say there are some programs that do allow for programs. They aren't specifically Pathways programs. However, there are programs that have connections with the USDA that allow for potential internship or shadowing experiences.
Excellent, Ryan. Again, I think like all of our programs, I think you want to look on our sites and think through the exact eligibility criteria and where you have questions or grayness, feel free to reach out. We have obviously a crew of people that will help you and really do want to mentor students in the next generation. So always reach out. If it's not within our eligibility criteria, we might know of other opportunities, so don't be shy. Mallory, back to you. Thank you for the presentation overall. Thanks. For research grants, especially for diet, nutrition, and the prevention of chronic diseases, I wonder if randomized control study designs is considered ideal, or community-based participatory research study design will be evaluated similarly as a rigorously evaluation method.
Sure. So research in combination with education or extension is essential to an integrated project. And the exact design, right, of the evaluation is most competitive when it's aligning with those ultimate program goals, right? There's no one particular design that, you know, is consistently rising to the top. What's really important is that the integrated nature be interwoven in proposals from the start. Our most competitive proposals really address that when we have instances of poor alignment, right, and poor programmatic fit. It typically is when the research core is almost linear with education or extension following after, and that doesn't align with that integrated requirement that we have for this program. So I would say absolutely, you know, based on your goals and your integrated approach, the ideal design to, you know, meet your aims and having a strong justification of that is what we see as most competitive in this program.
Thank you, Mallory. And again, thank you, SNEB, for hosting a NIFA update. We just found it so important to reach out to SNEB. As Ellen mentioned earlier, we've had a strong and long relationship with SNEB and wanted to make sure we had the opportunity to give you an update. You can see across our programs and our staff, we have a lot to share. We'll be following up with Rachel to make sure all questions submitted are answered, all links that we're sharing pop. To Mallory's point again, hopefully, again, any programmatic questions you have, please reach out to your NPLs. And to Suzanne, sometimes the best ways to know where certain study designs and issues fit is to serve as a panelist and see the panel review process in the works. So again, please consider volunteering for that effort. It's a great way to learn how things are evaluated and what ultimately is competitive and funded in NIFA. Rachel, again, without ado, we greatly appreciate you having all of us. Want to give our panelists an opportunity to wave and thank all the attendees for staying with us, and again, offering a lot of great questions for us to ponder as we move forward with SNEB offerings. Rachel?
Yeah, real quick, just to close this out. At the beginning of the webinar, I was remiss in thanking the SNEB Research Division who helped consult on the structure of this webinar. So just to know that SNEB does have a research division. So if you have an interest in joining that division, you're encouraged to do that. Reminder that today is the abstract deadline for the conference. We are planning to meet in person in Atlanta in the end of July, but abstracts can be presented virtually. So definitely two options if you would like to share your research. We'll have virtual abstract components as well as the ability to meet in person, we hope. And then just a reminder, Mondays are typically journal club, but journal club will resume next Monday. So as always, look at the SNEB website to register for upcoming webinars. And then when I close the webinar, there's a short survey. We'd appreciate your feedback. And then watch for an email. We'll try to get that organized and out by Wednesday with a link to the recording, the updated slides, the resource lists, and some of the other material. So again, thank you all to our panelists, and we hope to see you online, maybe in person soon.
Thank you, Rachel. And again, thank you for the research division help, and also happy Valentine's Day. That was something I forgot to kick us off with. Thank you, everybody.